Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The story of pipeline protests at Standing Rock is ongoing, even as the oil prepares to flow. Lee Patterson is a reporter for Inside Energy. She reported for the documentary film Beyond Standing Rock. It airs tomorrow night on SDPB-TV at 9 p.m. Central. And she's joining us now via phone from Sturgis on the road. Lee, welcome to In the Moment.
Hi there, Lori. Thanks for having me.
Also with us, we have the film's director, Brian Malone. He's calling in from just outside Denver. Hi, Brian.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Lee, let's start with you. And I'm curious when you first started reporting on Standing Rock and realized for the first time that this was more than just a pipeline story.
Sure. So I started reporting really from Denver. Excuse me. On the Dakota Access Pipeline protests in the fall. My colleague Amy Sisk, who's based in Bismarck, had been covering the protests for months at that point. But from Denver, I started to look into some of the very important related issues, like the legal case against the Dakota Access Pipeline and also the issue of pipeline safety. Mm-hmm. And the more we reported on these more contextual issues, the more we realize that, wow, this is about so much more than just a pipeline. There is a pipeline, of course, that's the physical object in question. But surrounding that pipeline are issues of historical mistrust, broken treaties, actions taken by the Army Corps of Engineers related to hydroelectric projects in the mid-20th century. And then, of course, there are some very important legal issues of today revolving around a concept called consultation, which is basically the idea that tribes need to be consulted because they are their own sovereigns. There's a government-to-government relationship, and their input needs to be considered. So this is a very big story.
And Brian, I'm wondering at what point you considered making a film about it.
Well, I think Lee kind of hit it on the head, but I think what really interested me in this film, this aspect of the film, is that this is a struggle that's been going on for, you know, the better part of two centuries. And what really became clear to me is that, you know, the lessons that we learn in school about Native Americans and Indian tribes and, you know, how the West was won and that kind of stuff, you know, that is the non-Native history. But in the shadows of all of that, Native Americans have been living a completely other history on the other side of the coin here this entire time of the United States of America. It's interesting. There's a colleague of mine that asked me once, how much longer do we have to pay restitution to Indians so that we don't have to pay for their land anymore. They don't have to pay for their existence anymore. And it was interesting because that came up in one of our interviews with former Assistant Secretary of Bureau of Indian Affairs, and he says, you know, this was all their land, and as long as the United States is a country, we put our country on top of that. So to me, that was a very intriguing and very interesting topic that I don't think had really seen the light of day for a while. So from a filmmaking perspective, that was some really compelling subject matter.
And I'll just add, Lori, that I am right now I'm in Sturgis on my way back to Denver. I was back on Standing Rock doing some reporting for a related project, talking to young people who were some of the very first protesters and some of the young people who did that long distance run to Washington, D.C. And one of the young women I talked to said to me, she's 13 years old. She was 12 when she got involved with the protests. She said, I'm sick of the government stepping on us. You know, going back hundreds of years, they've stepped on us at every single opportunity. She's 13 years old.
Right.
And she is just deeply, deeply aware of her tribe's history, especially relative to the United States government.
Lee, what were you hearing from the, you know, the pipeline officials or the North Dakota state officials? They were surprised by the level of protest and how it sort of captured the imagination and built. Should they have been surprised by that?
So I think everyone in the state of North Dakota and involved in the pipeline protests, I think everyone was surprised at how big they got and the level of protest activity that we saw. So the North Dakota Public Service Commission is the state agency that was tasked with permitting some of the pipeline, not the section in question that crosses under the Missouri River. But basically, the way state law is written, the Public Service Commission did not have to talk to the tribe. That's because the pipeline does not cross the reservation. And that's a really key point. The pipeline crosses maybe just half a mile or a mile away from the reservation. And so because the pipeline doesn't cross the Standing Rock Sioux tribal land, the state didn't have to talk to the tribe. Now, you may say, well, it crosses under their water source. It crosses their, you know, land that they have historic attachments to. It crosses close to the reservation. But when it comes to state statute, it's not required. And so I think the North Dakota Public Service Commissioner, in our interview with her, I think she was really surprised. I think she was really surprised by the protests. And, you know, she told us that she had no idea the Standing Rock Sioux had any concerns. Mm-hmm. And she maintains that the tribe did not come to any of the public meetings that were held on the pipeline route.
Is that this consistent with the story you heard from Dave Archambault, the chairman of Standing Rock Sioux Tribe?
I'll let Brian respond to that because he's the interim chairman.
Yeah.
What I add to Lee's point here is that what it also what I think the film reveals, to Lee's point exactly, is it reveals a lot of different interests with a very narrow focus on their own objectives and their own legal boundaries. In the case of the North Dakota Public Service Commission, they were not obligated. But it also shows that, well, gee whiz, maybe in hindsight, we probably should have tried a little harder to include them in the decision making. Even, you know, and we can get it. You can get into the legal tit for tat about that, but. What it shows is, like, God, common sense would tell you, you're going to run a pipeline half mile from the reservation boundary. You probably ought to try to, you know, figure something out where you include all parties. And I think that's why a big part of this, what we've noticed in the making of this film, is that the reason things blew up, or one of the big reasons things blew up, is because of this lack of communication. Hmm. Everyone had their siloed view of how things should go down and legally or whatnot. And there was not a lot of common sense in just folks talking to each other, which, you know, I think is paramount to why things escalated the way they did.
And let's talk about the intersection between the tribe and then some environmental groups. And there's, and I'm not sure which one of you got this footage, but there's a North Dakota, a representative from the sheriff's department there, who says, you know, there's the tribe, and then it turned into this, what his words were, big white hippie Burning Man. And that made me laugh out loud.
Thank you. We selected that clip just for you.
Thank you.
We did enjoy that.
So talk about that convergence between, you know, outsiders, if we can use that word, coming to the area and claiming this as an issue of their own.
He's right. Because and here's the thing. It's complicated. There's not a right side and a wrong side to this. It's complicated, and there are people who are passionate about protesting, but they're mixed in with people who, you know, I don't know these people's background, but these are the same folks that if they camp out for months and months and months, and I don't know if they're independently wealthy or whatnot, but it sure seemed like there were a lot of, like, I'll just say it, there are a lot of white people in the camp, and there are a lot of white people on the front lines of the protests as well. That, you know, are in support of this and have kind of attached an environmental component to this.
I think if you talk to members of the tribe, you'll get a variety of answers, Lori, to your question.
Sure.
You know, several folks I talked to this past week and over the past few months say listen, this is not about fossil fuels. We, you know, we're practical. We drove our cars here. We wear petroleum-based products. This is about our water, and we don't want the pipeline going under it because water has religious significance to our tribe, and also we need clean water, just as a, you know, in a very basic way. There are other folks who will say we need to fight, you know, other folks within the tribe that say we need to fight big oil, we need to transition to renewables, you know, the black snake is coming, this is a prophecy. And I think there are also very mixed views on whether or not the outside protesters were welcome. Mm-hmm. I think that tribal members are grateful in a way for the masses that came because it elevated the profile of the protests. But, you know, as one, the same young woman told me yesterday, that the protests started out as a very pure thing. It was tribal members, mostly young people, no drugs and alcohol allowed, very much focused on prayer and ceremony and meditation. And once those ranks swelled into the thousands, maybe 10,000 people were at those camps at the height of those protests, things changed.
Now, Lee, are you talking about Alice Brown Otter or a different, I know she's featured in
yes,
the film.
Yes, Alice Brown Otter.
Tell me about her and her journey, because I think that's really worth tuning in for as well.
Sure. So she heard about the Dakota Access Pipeline in school in late spring, and a couple of young people got together along with some filmmakers from New York and made a video in which these young people talked about why water is important to them. From there, things started to happen really fast. A woman named Bobby Jean Three Legs, who's from South Dakota, she organized a run. And the point of the run was to get the attention, really, of the federal government. These young people, led by Bobby Jean Three Legs, including Alice Brown Otter when she was just 12 years old, ran and in some cases drove all the way to Washington, D.C. Alice says she averaged about 10 miles a day. So we're talking about some serious running here.
Right.
They ran through different communities and picked up people along the way. They stayed in churches. They stayed in relatives' homes. They stayed on reservations. People fed them. I think they also encountered some difficulties, people saying, you know, go back to the reservation. We don't want you here. They eventually made it to Washington, D.C., and they, these young people, maybe 20 or 30 of them, had a meeting with the Army Corps of Engineers and the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And this was basically, in Alice's telling, an opportunity for these young people to talk about their lives on the reservation and why clean water is so important to them. Hmm. And the way Alice tells it, their stories brought tears to the eyes of some of the government officials in the room. I think they talked about poverty on the reservation, struggles with drug and alcohol, lack of opportunity, sometimes the feeling of hopelessness, like there is no future for people who live there. And Alice said, you know, they had that meeting, and she said she felt as though her voice was heard, that she felt empowered as a 12-year-old, and that these officials said that they were going to take the message to the Army Corps of Engineers General and also to the president. So that was Alice Brown Otter and other young people. They were some of the very first protesters before the movement, you know, became the news-making headline that it has been.
Right. And it helped her gain her voice. She said very clearly that she was not the kind of person who would speak out, and now she is on the path to who knows what her future will be as a leader in her community and in our country.
Exactly.
The film is called Beyond Standing Rock, and we have just scratched the surface of it because there are also visits with the Southern Ute tribe and other things, President Obama, President Trump. It's all in this documentary. I highly recommend you tune in for it. Tomorrow night, SDPB-TV at 9 p.m. Central. Brian Malone and Lee Patterson, we're out of time, but I want to say thank you to both of you for joining us today and giving us just a hint of what's in this documentary.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.